on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland branch of the Multnomah County Library in Portland. The Multnomah County District Attorney is one of the most powerful elected persons in the state. Several candidates are running for this office. All candidates have been invited to attend, speak to the audience, and answer questions. Again, that's the Multnomah County District Attorney Candidate Forum on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland branch of the Multnomah County Library, 805 Southeast 122nd Avenue. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kbu.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
Cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you.
Good morning. Good morning. Just me and Hank Williams with you here this lovely Tuesday morning in the soggy month of November here in the great Pacific Northwest. My name is Abe. This is the Abe and Joe Show. Joe is unable to be with us today. It's just going to be you and I today talking about the ongoing parade, the circus that is the Trump impeachment inquiry in Washington, D.C. There are a number of very significant events that transpired over this this past week that have profound implications as this process goes forward, not only in terms of the future of the President of the United States, but I think in future of the Republic as we have come to understand it. That may sound grandiose, and perhaps is, but I want to make the case today that the immediate future is something that we need to pay very close attention to. The next few weeks, the next few months of this case as it transpires, I guess the background of the presidential election unfolds. This is a seminal period of American history that we are living through right now, for good or for ill. And I want to hopefully illuminate why this exactly is the case. It's good to be back with you. I've been away. I've spent most of the last couple of weeks incubating a colony of viruses that very generously decided to take root in my system. I'm becoming increasingly convinced that we human beings are on this planet not to fulfill any personal destiny that we might have, not to self-actualize, not to improve the lot of humanity. No, we are here to move viruses from one place to another. So whatever it is that you feel is important, it's not. You are simply a vehicle for viruses to get around. So I hope you're doing your job. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you'd like to write to us, you can do that. The Facebook page is facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can also send us a tweet at HonestAbe72. I want to start today with two court cases, one from the past and one from our present. The first is something called the United States versus Nixon, decided in 1972. And this is something that has great relevance for what's happening now for a whole host of reasons I hope will become clear over the course of this program. The United States versus Nixon hinged around the infamous tapes from Nixon's Oval Office The tapes in question contain conversations between the president and his staff in which he implicated himself in the Watergate scandal, which at that time, 1974, was unfolding before the eyes of the American people and of the world. So on this particular stretch of audio tapes, Nixon was infamous for recording virtually every utterance that took place within his Oval Office, not out of some dedication to posterity, not because he harbored some sort of deep commitment to the truth and was a fastidious record taker. No, it had more to do with Nixon's deep paranoia than it did with anything else. So the tapes in question, infamously, contained a series of conversations that directly implicated the president in what was going on in the Watergate affair. Nixon initially refused to hand these tapes over to Congress on the grounds that to do so would be to violate national security, and even more so to infringe upon the president's prerogatives of privacy. I can't do this, he argued, because future conversations between presidents and his or her staff, in light of a revelation like this, would mean that they would have to hedge their responses, that they would have to couch their answers, they would have to limit their conversations with the president on the grounds that what they're saying might one day become public and might one day be disclosed in a similar proceeding to the Watergate hearings. The Supreme Court quite famously said, no, sorry, Mr. President, that's not the case. You've got to hand over the tapes. The president ruled 8-0 against the president, compelled him to hand over the tapes. The contents of that conversation were made public, and within a span of weeks, the president resigned in the midst of impeachment proceedings against him. Here's what Chief Justice Warren Burger said at the time, in his majority opinion in the United States versus Nixon, 1974. Quote, we cannot conclude that advisors will be moved to temper the candor of their remarks by the infrequent occasions of disclosure because of the possibility that such conversations will be called for in the context of a criminal prosecution. So Berger's saying, no, I'm sorry, that argument doesn't hold any water. The instances in which private conversations between a president and his or her staff, the instances in which those might be disclosed to the public are so few and far between that we simply cannot consider them to be a hindrance in this situation. That happens so rarely that, no, sorry, future conversations between presidents and their staffs will not be compromised by the fact that we're requiring you, Mr. President, to hand over these tapes. And as I mentioned, this led directly to the resignation of the President of the United States. Now, this is a moment, in and of itself, obviously a moment of great constitutional and national import. Within the context of the Watergate hearings, of course it was. But even more so, it represented a moment, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on this program. It represented a moment, the crux of the whole Watergate proceedings. At that point, President Nixon, I think, probably knew in his heart, in his mind, that things were going to go badly for him. But of course, he was putting up a fight. He was maintaining that his prerogatives as the president, his imperial prerogatives as the president, trumped any constitutional duty of oversight that the legislative branch may have possessed. He was arguing, in essence, that I, the president, must be free to do these things because I am the president, and there is no other entity within our constitutional system quite like the president, who possesses the same combination of powers and responsibilities. There's nobody else like the president. Therefore, the rules simply do not apply. The Supreme Court replied, oh, no, the rules most definitely do apply, and you most definitely must comply. And at that moment in time, when faced with this decision, President Nixon himself had to make a decision. Do I hand over the tapes or do I not? Or writ a little bit larger, do I submit myself to our constitutional order? Do I acknowledge the legitimacy of Congress's powers of oversight? Or do I not? He made what was ultimately the right decision, and he handed over those tapes to Congress. Had he not, then the United States would have been in a full-blown constitutional crisis. And it has been argued by many that the Watergate affair constituted, in toto, a constitutional crisis, and that's probably accurate. But we right there were faced with there was the moment. That was the moment of the Watergate proceedings. The president was forced to acknowledge or not whether the Congress had a legitimate power to oversee the activities of the executive branch. He ultimately decided, yes, they do. He handed over the tapes, and that was soon the end of his presidency. I bring this whole case up from way back in the 20th century, because it has an enormous amount of relevance for what we are living through right now. Just yesterday, a federal judge, in Washington, ruled that White House counsel Don McGahn, a central figure in the ongoing, I guess we're looking at two scandals now, but principally Don McGahn was a principal actor in the Russia 2016 election interference scandal. The federal judge ruled that Don McGahn must, in fact, respond to congressional subpoenas, must show up, and must give his testimony before Congress. Up to this point, the president had been arguing, and is in fact still arguing, that Don McGahn and other close members of his inner circle enjoyed absolute immunity from professional or from congressional oversight, saying that advancing an argument very similar to that which Nixon advanced in 1974, saying that to compel McGahn and others to testify would be to compromise national security, which would be to transgress on the prerogatives of the presidency, would be to endanger the United States, in short. Judge Jackson, the federal judge in question, said no and offered in a more than 100-page opinion around her decision. It was simply remarkable piece of legal writing. And I'm going to quote you throughout the show a number of passages from this decision. So near the beginning of her decision, the judge quoted James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, along with French diplomat Alexis de Tocqueville, in explaining the nature of the American presidency. Now, if you're a constitutional geek like I am, this stuff is just endlessly fascinating. So if you're not, I ask you just to bear with me for a little while. Stated simply, Judge Jackson writes, the primary takeaway from the past 250 years of recorded American history is that presidents are not kings. It is indisputable that current and former employees of the White House work for the people of the United States, and that they take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. So she's saying no. Just as the Supreme Court did in 1974 in the United States versus Nixon, she is saying that the president is not above the law. The president is not a king. The president must bow before the legitimate oversight role of Congress. This is what is known informally in legal circles as a very big deal. This means that going forward, the president is no longer going to be able to hide behind claims of executive privilege and trying to shelter his people from testifying before Congress. In the context of the impeachment inquiry that's been going on, that just wrapped up last week, at least this stage of it, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. In the context of the impeachment inquiry that's unfolding, this means McGahn, who was implicated in the Mueller report, which of course focused on Russian electoral interference in 2016, this means McGahn must appear to testify not only in the context of that investigation, but in the context of any role that he may have played in the unfolding Ukraine scandal. It also means that host of the members of the president's inner circle that have heretofore refused to comply to congressional subpoenas have got to do so. Now, we should note at this point that the president has appealed this decision. this decision is going to find its way to the Supreme Court. And then we are going to be faced with a moment similar to that faced by President Nixon in 2016. And it's important to remember a couple of facts as this goes forward. The president, quite clearly, I think beyond any reasonable doubt at this point, if we can believe the testimony we've heard over the past few weeks in the impeachment inquiry, the president solicited from the president of the Ukraine, there I go, calling it the Ukraine again, from the president of Ukraine, solicited help in investigating a domestic political opponent, Joe Biden. This is clear beyond a reasonable doubt. The president did it. We have numerous transcripts, including those released by the White House itself. We have admissions on camera from the president himself, from the attorney general, from his acting chief of staff. We have all of these people who have admitted, not under oath, obviously, but in public, which has, I think, in a way is just as damning in its way as an admission under oath, that this is the case. We know that this happened. There is a group of people. Actually, there are two groups of people I want us to consider right now. There is one group of people connected to this ongoing question that have been willing to testify under oath that the president did all these things. They have said that the president did all these things, and they have said so under oath. There is a second group of people, Don McGahn among them, who say that the president didn't do these things and that he's innocent. The difference between the two, one is willing to say so under oath, the other is not. If this decision holds up at the Supreme Court, and I predict that it will, then those people are going to have to take an oath and either decide to lie or decide to tell the truth. But whichever decision they make is going to precipitate, I believe, the end of this presidency one way or another, whether it's through resignation, which is unlikely, which is through removal from office by a trial in the Senate, also very unlikely, or the third possibility, and I believe the most likely, that he will be voted out of office next year in the presidential election. So as I mentioned, if you're a constitutional and a history geek like I am, this is fascinating stuff. If you're an ordinary American, maybe this isn't quite so fascinating, but it's really important. And here's why. And it goes back to that moment faced by Nixon in 1974 in the context of that court decision, in the context of the United States versus Nixon. I mentioned that the decision in that case compelled the president to hand over those tapes. And at that moment, he had a decision to make. He had to decide whether he, the president of the United States, was above the law or not. And Nixon, regardless of whatever else you might say about him, and I don't have very much good to say about Richard Nixon, he realized in that moment that the republic was bigger than he was, that the Constitution was bigger than he was, that the integrity of our systems and our institutions were bigger than he was, and he made the right decision. Pretty soon, President Trump is going to be staring into that same abyss, and I believe he is not going to make the right decision. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. I'm interested to hear what our listeners have to say about this today, because there is a thread that has been running through conversations of this presidency, and really one that characterizes a certain brand of discourse from the left. And I know that many of you out there listening to this program subscribe to this line of thinking. I know because you've phoned up this program many times and you've told us. And here's how this line of thinking goes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happens in this decision. It doesn't matter whether the president decides to capitulate to congressional oversight or not. It doesn't matter if the president's inner circle decide to testify or not. It doesn't matter because our system is inherently corrupt, and anything it produces is inherently worthless, and no true progress as human beings, whether we organize into a nation state or we consider ourselves as one species on this planet, no real human progress can take place until we scrap the system that exists and replace it with something else. This is a line of thinking that emanates from a certain section of the left. I really don't know how you would describe that section of the left, but it's there because, as I mentioned, we hear about it on this program and you hear about it in the greater discourse. This is the same line of thinking that says there's no difference between the two major parties. It doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter, for example, how we evaluate the presidency of Barack Obama because he did A, B, and C. Therefore, this invalidates any other things he may have done. He was, by virtue of waging a drone war, a drone campaign in the Middle East, for example, fundamentally lacking in integrity, and any other achievements he may have authored either domestically or internationally are fundamentally worthless because he is part of a corrupt system, therefore corrupt himself, and it really doesn't matter. And we've heard various shades of this argument on this program in the context of the Trump presidency, in the context of the Bush presidency, in the context of the Obama. I've been doing this too long, haven't I? We've heard this line of thinking out of the left. It is my opinion that this is a wrong way to conceive of our republic and its institutions. And when I make this argument, and I urge you to call up and comment, 503-231-8187. As I make this argument, I want you to consider a couple things. Actually, scratch that. Let me just make the argument, and then we'll go back and talk about what I want you to consider. Engineer Ray is characterizing this argument as making the perfect the enemy of the good, and I think that's a really excellent way to summarize that argument. The actions of the United States government are so far from perfect that they're invalid. You know, every decision we make that isn't immediately, for example, that doesn't immediately completely rejigger our economic system to move it away from carbon is completely invalid. Half measures don't count. Any decision we make that doesn't immediately address the roots of corruption and money in the political system is invalid. Half measures don't count. I understand this frustration. I understand this. I really do. Because, you know, if you're a liberal observer of American politics, you, if you're paying any sort of attention at all, have become increasingly frustrated over the passage of years as you realize that these problems we see compound again and again and again. And there are half measures and half efforts made at addressing them, but they really don't go anywhere. And we talk a good game about, we offer platitudes about climate change and about removing corruption from politics and about addressing the concentration of wealth that so plagues our system. We make, you know, we talk a good game, but ultimately we do nothing. Any decisions we make, any initiatives we embark upon have no teeth. We can't achieve any lasting or meaningful change. Therefore, everything, if it's not perfect, then it's worthless. I think this is a dangerous way of thinking. I think this is a dangerous way of thinking. And here's why. Let's game this forward. What happens when the President of the United States is faced with the inevitable Supreme Court decision that I believe, despite the composition of the court and despite its recent history, I think is going to come down on the side of Congress here? When the President is faced with his Nixon moment, what is he going to do? It's my belief that he's going to make the wrong decision, and we will well and truly be in a constitutional crisis. We will have stepped off a brink into nothingness, into a place where the president refuses to comply with the legitimate powers of Congress. Congress finds that it has no mechanism to compel his cooperation, that court decisions mean nothing. And in that moment, the president will have set himself above the law. And in that moment, I honestly don't know what we are going to do. And I'm saying to you, listeners, that this moment is in our very near future. We will collectively, as a republic, however flawed we might be, however corrupt our institutions may have become, however little collective confidence remains in our institutions, in our practices, in our norms, we will be in this place of nothingness. And what happens then is anybody's guess, which makes the intervening period between now and whenever this Supreme Court decision is handed down, in weeks, in months, I don't know, it makes this next period of time incredibly important in terms of the voice that we, the American people, are able to muster. It matters in terms of the arguments we're able to put forward. It matters in terms of how much we really want to continue to live in a representative democracy. Again, however flawed it may have become. And I submit to you listeners that our representative democracy, however flawed it may have become, is infinitely preferable to the nothingness in which we will find ourselves when the president takes that step, and the dictatorship that we will find ourselves in after he does it. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Natalie. Good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I just wanted to mention that I don't think we need to say that it's a portion of the left that thinks that the system is flawed and not worth participating in. It's both on the left and the center and on the right. It's not something that's exclusive to people who are not Democrats. So I do think that it's what you're speaking to is disenfranchisement, but it's not just the sector of the left.
Well,
that the system is flawed. You find it also in the right and conservative circles. I mean, I've spoken with people from the Better Prayer in some of the rallies. I know it does happen. You can engage in conversation, and they express very similar sentiments about how flawed the system is. And I don't think that there's going to be nothingness afterwards. That's very poetic of you.
Thank you.
But I think you need a little more coffee. But, you know, I think a lot of the action is going to be going back again to local action. And we need to be out. We need to be out, you know, fighting the Jordan Cove pipeline, with our bodies on the line. People feel that they don't have any more power, and that's why you don't see any rallies or movements of people on the street on a regular basis. But the real fight is... it's going to happen again at the local level, where people are getting pissed off by some of the things that are going on at the local level. Those were my comments.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to hang up because it's very loud in the park.
All right. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input. Yeah, I think the caller is right that there are voices emanating from across the political spectrum voicing frustration with what they see as the brokenness of our constitutional order. You know, and I can't argue with those arguments, really, because yes, our constitutional order is profoundly broken. I think the difference, is the solutions that those various arguments propose. The solution emanating from the far right regarding the brokenness of our constitutional order. And interestingly, you'll note that, arguments coming from the right tend to describe our system as broken for profoundly different reasons than those on the left. But where they really differ is in the solution offered. The right wants to see a strong man, believes that a salvation lies in a dictatorial figure much like Donald Trump. I alone can fix this. Remember what he said on the campaign trail in 2016? I alone can fix our broken system. I alone can kick out the brown people. That's a pretty stark difference between the solutions that are coming out of the left. Now, that said, we have to acknowledge also that there is a nihilistic argument coming out of the left too, saying, let it all burn. It's all corrupt. It's all flawed. We're all doomed anyway. The planet's going to eat itself and burn to a crisp. Who cares? Let it all burn, and we'll sift through the ashes afterwards. That is a flawed argument. Let's go back to the phone. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. I get a lot of my stuff from the Jimmy Dore show. Is that a thing? Like, have people heard of Jimmy Dore?
I have not heard of Jimmy Dore.
I think you'd really enjoy it if you're looking for like a 180-degree take on where you're coming from. Basically, his argument is that Trump is a malignant narcissist. And like any malignant narcissist, Trump loves it when you talk about Trump. And basically, you know, we've got a couple Democratic socialists, you know, running in the Democratic primary, talking about things like a Green New Deal, putting a stop to ecocide, and so on and so forth. So I guess where they're coming from, where I'm coming from, we should stop talking about Trump And we should start talking about how we're going to make the lives of people better through things like slashing military spending, a massive Green New Deal. And like, if I want to, you know, if I want to hear the Trump all day stuff, I'll find someone that can afford MSNBC. Like, the reason I listen to KABU is I want to hear no-nonsense attacks on capitalism, imperialism, ecocide. So it's kind of jarring to, like, turn on someone on KBOO Portland who is then saying, like, well, unless we sound like MSNBC, then we're not even leftists. So you can see how that would be a little troubling for me.
Yeah, are you suggesting that's what I'm doing?
Well, I'm just saying that when I want to, like, KBOO is a pretty reliable source
sure.
for, you know, people who are, you know, absolutely dead set against capitalism, imperialism,
right.
ecocide.
Sure.
And you're kind of, you know, your voice is a bit of an exception to that, you know, so
well,
that's all I'm saying.
Sure. Well, where I'm coming from is this. We are all citizens of this republic. There are many divergent opinions on how that republic ought to be organized, many divergent opinions on how we may or may not have diverged from the visions of, you know, the framers of this republic. But the fact remains that our chief executive is undergoing an impeachment inquiry right now for unconstitutional illegal conduct. To me, that matters. That should matter to every citizen of this republic, regardless of one's position on any number of issues, including those that you mentioned at the beginning of this call.
Have you ever heard of Paul Street and Chris Hedges?
I know Chris Hedges. I don't know Paul Street.
Chris Hedges does this great interview. Paul Street gave a lecture at the Left Forum in 2018. It's on YouTube. But basically, those guys were basically, you know, saying, like, the 1% and their flunkies in the professional managerial classes, say the top 10%, they constitute a sort of class of limousine liberals that are actually deliberately steering the conversation away from policy and towards this Trump cult, this obsession with Trump, for the purpose of reelecting Trump. That's the reason we're not talking about the fact that people don't have $500 in savings in their pocket, that their lives are precarious and miserable, because the limousine liberal class, the, you know, this top 10% of PMC flunkies, they deliberately want to take the people's anti-establishment attention away from these systemic issues and get it all focused on the whole Trump thing.
Well, let me assure you unequivocally that first, I'm not a member of the 10%, and secondly, I think when the president is facing impeachment proceedings, that's worthy of conversation. I don't talk about this because I'm bent on reelecting Trump. Please let me make that
but
absolutely clear.
You can see where I'm coming from, though, right? You can see
where you're coming from, absolutely. But I'm saying that does not describe my motives as the host of this show.
I'm just saying maybe some people are even, like, unconsciously falling into that trap. That's the reason for my call, I guess, this morning.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's some merit in what you say. Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Francis. Good morning.
Hi. I kind of agree with your last caller, and now we've got this Stop and Frisk Bloomberg or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Yeah, another billionaire running for president.
Jumping in because for some reason, those who adore the corporate way of living are afraid to have a true progressive be president. And so the Democratic Party is doing it again. It's the same sort of scenario where we have to have somebody in there who represents opposition to Trump. Real opposition. And as I agree with your last caller, if we start talking about what we want to do and promote that, this man who is, to me, he's kind of like a charade. He's lifted up the rug, though. He's lifted up the rug for us to see and to be totally, fully aware of everything that has been swept under the rug. And as far as I'm concerned, we've been in a constitutional crisis for a long time. And there's three men being released from prison today who were wrongfully convicted 36 years ago. Now, there's those people in prison like that are living a constitutional crisis every single day. And I don't, we need to start talking about how we're going to fix things and how we're going to repair and make reparations. And as your last caller said, the Green New Deal, there's a whole lot we need to do. And rather than the Democratic Party's doing it again, they're focusing on trying to get somebody in there who can beat Trump, quote unquote.
Right.
Let's talk about what we can do to fix all the constitutional crises that people are going through every day of their lives right now.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that, Francis. But you mentioned towards the start of your
and
call.
And if he doesn't go to jail, he doesn't go to jail. A whole lot of people are going to jail through the court system. They should not be in jail at all.
You're
corrupt.
You're absolutely correct. But I don't.
So he's one that got away, and we're going to fix what's wrong.
You mentioned towards the start of your call that you feel in many ways that this president is a charade.
What it is to me, and I know that he probably isn't even thinking this way, but it's almost like, let's see how much they'll let me get away with. Let's see how hateful and racist and bigoted I can be. Let's see how corrupt I can be. And just watch. Just see how much I can get away with. And he's getting away with a whole lot. The day that he called Colin Kaepernick a son of a bitch, he should have been impeached that day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, Francis. In fact, this business over fishing.
So why, you know, go ahead.
This business over fishing for dirt on Joe Biden in Ukraine is probably the least of his crimes. But I would caution you against describing his presidency as a charade. I think that there are kids locked in cages at the border in their own filth who would disagree with that characterization.
Well, there's people in prison who've been there for 30 years who would disagree
with a whole lot of other charades
that have been going on, where we're pretending like we're something we're not.
I don't think we're real far apart on this, Francis, you and I.
Right. No, I don't either. I just think how we're going to approach it is the issue, and I really don't know. I don't know, you know, if the man thinks he can disobey every single law in our country, including the Constitution, and nobody's going to do anything about it. Why? What's up with them? What's up with Mitch McConnell?
That's precisely why I think impeachment proceedings are so critical. When the president commits impeachable offenses, they must be addressed. Otherwise, future presidents will feel free to do as worse or more than this president.
And when a man can spend millions of dollars to run for president, a man who promoted stop and frisk and violating the rights of thousands of young people can run for president, I don't know. I think we need to stop letting, you know, can a person be a corporation?
No, but a corporation can be a person.
Right. Well, if a person can't be a corporation, they don't get to have it both ways. Thank you very much.
I agree. So, Francis, thank you for your call.
Once we stop giving corporations all these rights, we might see some improvements.
Hey, listen, I appreciate your comments as always, Francis. I do want to say this, though. It's vitally important that this president be impeached, that he be forced to answer for his misdeeds. That's important. Not just because what he does violates a general sense of decency and obligation to one's fellow human beings, but also because, as I just mentioned to Francis, when a president commits an impeachable offense, he or she must be impeached. They must, if we want to retain any sort of confidence in our constitutional order. And as we've described, I think, amply on this program, that confidence is shaky on a number of fronts. If we're to maintain any sort of confidence, then we must do these things. But at the same time, an insistence that we hold this president to account is by no means an attempt to avoid the vast systemic work that we need to put in as a people into fundamentally reorganizing how our economy works, into a fundamental examination and reorganization of how class and racial privilege work in this country, a fundamental reevaluation and reorganization of how human activity impacts the ecosystem of this planet. All of these huge systemic problems which confront us still have to be addressed. But I'm saying to you today that they are of a piece with holding this president to account. We can't solve the one without the other. So, and that's why I think arguments about distraction, like the previous caller before Francis brought up, that's why I think those are problematic arguments. Yeah, oh, you're just distracted by the, Trump loves it when you talk about him. You're playing right into his hands because it's Trump, Trump, Trump all the time. Well, maybe we're feeding the insatiable appetite of a deranged narcissist. In fact, I think it's pretty safe to say that we are. But nevertheless, his deeds must be faced and dealt with. He must face accountability. And we must address these systemic challenges. Let's go to Robbie. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. What I want to say is that I believe the last caller was trying to say is that we see the facade. This is all a giant show. You paying attention to Trump? Here's the thing. Yeah, here's the most dangerous thing about Trump right now is because of people like you, you're willing to vote for anybody who gets the Democratic nomination. That's not what people and me and, you know, people are paying attention. I don't think you've actually read Chris Hedges or Noam Chomsky for that matter, because what they're saying
I have.
Is that this election, let me finish my point real quick if I can. Basically, this impeachment is playing directly into the hands of Trump and the elite. And I'll tell you why. Nancy Pelosi chose this time because now the primaries are going to be going on right when the trials are going on, and it's going to tie up and stunt the progressive movement. That's because the liberals don't care if it's another 4 years of Trump, as long as they're suppressing the progressive movement. This is what Noam Chomsky, this is what Chris Hedges are identifying. Now, furthermore, if this is like you want to impeach Trump, we should have done that 3 years ago. And right now, this is playing into his book because half the people that don't believe that Trump has caused an impeachable offense, you know, the Republicans, they're going to be fighting this tooth and nail, and it's not going to pass through the Supreme Court. So this is just shooting ourselves in the foot. Furthermore, I think, as I said earlier, Trump being the most dangerous thing has basically allowed anybody on the Democratic field to be better than Trump. That's not true. I did not vote for Obama. I was an activist with Black Lives Matter. I was an activist with the tar sands, the Dakota Access Pipeline. Occupy Wall Street all happened under Obama. And you know what? Just because it wasn't written in policy, every deportation was typically a family separation. So when then there's people out here that are saying, you know what, this people, like what we're witnessing right now is the DNC rigging another election, and you're going to be okay with that as long as it's not Trump. That's what's more dangerous, and the fact that we're not even paying attention to it. So I feel like what you're saying, and when you're saying like, oh yeah, well we need to pay attention, why didn't they actually get him on the there's all these other crimes they could have got him on. And you know what I find so fascinating? Here we are pointing fingers about, oh, he's going to dig up information and interfere with our election. What about our mainstream news that is literally shunting the Bernie Sanders campaign?
Yeah.
And is that not election interference?
Let me interrupt you for just a second. I'm hearing a lot of whataboutism from you, and I want to ask you this, and I want you to answer me honestly. Are you suggesting then that the alternative at this moment in time is to simply say that the president is free to do whatever he pleases?
No, that's not at all. What I'm saying.
All right, then what are you arguing then? Are you arguing that the president should not be impeached for committing impeachable offenses?
Did I actually say that, Abe?
No, I'm not sure what you're saying, so I'm asking you.
I can tell, and this is what I'm trying to say, is that this impeachment is going to be playing into the hands of Trump. You're not paying attention to Chris Hedges. You're not paying attention to Noam Chomsky.
Do you think the president should be impeached for his actions?
Of course. He should have been impeached 3 years ago.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
So this is what I'm trying to say. This should have happened 3 years ago.
But it didn't.
It should have happened with... Okay, so now what we're going to witness is this play into his playbook.
Okay. I don't see that we have any other choice but to impeach him.
See, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. It's because you and the liberals that are like, hey, well, as long as we vote Democrat, no matter who, well, this isn't going to be playing into us because I don't play by those games. If you vote for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting evil.
Okay.
I vote for what I believe.
All right. Well, you go ahead and don't play by this game. And then when the Republic goes down the tubes and we are existing under. It's my fault.
No, it's your. Okay. Yeah, it is. It is. Because Oregon has voted for. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Oregon voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, it did.
The Electoral College is the people. You keep talking about, oh, we have like this American representative democracy, no matter how flawed it is. You know what? That's not true. We don't live in a democracy. There are people who are marginalized in these communities that aren't having, that don't have democracy like you do. And just because you do doesn't mean that everybody does. And if it comes down to having a Joe Biden versus Donald Trump, like, I think that's just completely absurd that you're going to make somebody vote for Joe Biden simply because it's not Donald Trump, when there's actually people like me, like your other callers, like us, saying stop with this bull crap about the impeachment. Let's talk about how we fix things. If you think impeaching Trump's going to help, I'm saying you're wrong, and you're going to let us right into another Trump.
Yeah, it'll be all my fault, I'm sure. Listen, dude, if you want to continue to fiddle while Rome burns, that's fine. But meanwhile, many of us are going to try to put out the fire. All right, Pear, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, I would just say that just about everything you say about Trump is true. I'd like to look at the big, the other side, which has been called the blob for good reasons. It's kind of like the Cold War Democrats, the Henry Jackson Democrats. Actually, that's the CIA's politics, is generally Cold War liberalism. They're liberal at home and they're interventionist abroad. And I think that whatever reasons, Trump got in the way of their plans. You go back in history, you go back to George Bush the First, when they started encircling, moving NATO forward and messing up Yugoslavia and then into Georgia. I mean, there's been this slow, steady, historical process to encircle Russia. And
China in more recent years.
And Trump, whatever you say about him, he has gotten in the way. They really expected Hillary Clinton to win that election, and the process would continue. Trump has gotten in the way. And so, get rid of Trump, impeach him, whatever you want to do. That's fine with me. I'm saying keep an eye on these other people. Maybe the Bernie Sanders Democrats can interfere with this process. I don't know. But right now, the centrist Democrats are in charge, and they are itching for some kind of action against Russia, via Ukraine. And I think we need to keep our eye on this. This is a serious thing. So that's where we are. And it's like, yeah, we're going to go down the tubes in different ways. Are you there?
I am, yeah. I'm just darkly chuckling. That's what I'm doing.
Chuckling. Well, okay, but
you're right. You're right, Pear. And I think this is to an extent of a piece of what the previous caller was trying to say, that yes, even as we deal with the fallout of a manifestly corrupt and unfit chief executive, we cannot lose sight of all the systemic issues confronting us, including the neoliberal project to encircle and isolate both Russia and China. You're absolutely right. So thank you very much for the call. 231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program on KBOO 90.7. Joe is not with us today. It's just me and y'all. And coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear part two of David Barsamian's interview with linguist and scholar Noam Chomsky about threats to peace and the planet. At 10 on Flashpoints, we hear a three-part special on missing and murdered indigenous women. And at 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts presents the Indigenous Special Series, INDI, I think that's an acronym, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, The Definition of Resilience, a documentary about Indigenous hip-hop artists. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Kristen Derry interviews Chloe and Beth, directors of Women House, about their newest exhibition. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming, download our mobile app today. All this and more coming up on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO. Let's go to Harvey. Good morning.
Hi, Abe. I want you to know, first of all, I think you're right. And but I also have an opinion based on the fact that I'm a renewable energy advocate. When Trump first got in, he installed Rex Tillerson, the U.S. as U.S. Secretary of State. Rex Tillerson was the head of Exxon, and it turns out that Exxon knew 10 years before they let out the public that climate change was coming, and so they had to really make sure that they had control of the gear, so to speak. And Trump is their man, and the Trump and his administration are a fully owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry, and their main ploy right now is distraction. Good or bad, they love distraction, and this is the perfect vehicle for them. Every day that they can keep their fossil fuel game going is a day worth billions and trillions of dollars to them.
Right.
And what we can do is we can vote with our dollars by investing in renewable energy on a local basis, solar panels, battery technology, electric cars, other forms. We can go to our local politicians and our officials and work with them. Like in New York, the city of New York voted to take the pension funds from the firemen and the policemen and divest from fossil fuels and reinvest in renewables. So this is how we can take the power, because right now the fossil fuel industry, which is a dying industry, this is their last hurrah, are using everything they can in their arsenal to forestall their demise, and distraction is the key. So it's all distraction, you know, one thing after the other. It's endless distraction, and I say that we have to move forward and work and keep our strength together and work to bring this new world. And because the Trump administration once again is owned by the fossil fuel industry, and they're killing our planet, and that's what I see here. It's all in the name of distraction, including this impeachment, which may or may not happen, but I believe that they actually love it, because anytime they can steer us away from the real problems of our planet, which is a wrong-way energy system, they'll do it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you very much for the call. I want to take, before we go on to our next callers, I want to take just a moment to expand upon something I mentioned earlier. And I talked about that moment, that Nixon moment that's awaiting Trump in the not too distant future, where he will be confronted with a choice. And the choice will be, as I framed it before, does the constitutional order matter or does it not? Is the president above the law or is he not? And as I mentioned before, I don't think we can count on President Trump to make a similar decision to the one that President Nixon made. And I described that moment and its aftermath as sort of stepping off into space, right? Sort of leaving behind the firm ground or soft and spongy and swampy ground, such as it is, of our constitutional order, and stepping out into something different. The reason this is so important, the reason that beyond that point lies nihilism, is that really, since the end of the Second World War, there has been a concerted effort in this country on behalf of moneyed conservative interests to undo the New Deal that was enacted under President Roosevelt and subsequently strengthened by President Johnson's Great Society, and to a certain extent by things like President Nixon's EPA. All of these steps forward that we made that paid workers more, that guaranteed workers to the right to a safe workplace, to a decent wage, to time off, to paid compensation for all sorts of things. All of these gains that we've made have been under systemic and systematic attack by the moneyed right since the end of the Second World War. And really, we saw their overarching goal as dismantling the New Deal. And this really very nearly came to fruition under the administration of Bush the Dumber. And unfortunately, we saw that work continued, although to a much lesser degree, by the Obama administration. Once Trump takes that step off into nothingness, those forces which have been working to dismantle the New Deal will realize that their moment has come around at last. And in that nothingness into which President Trump will step, I predict that he will decide that he is bigger than the Republic. That will be the supreme testing moment for our constitutional order. I believe that at that moment, the forces that have been working to undo the New Deal will seize that moment. We will have then arrived in something that is no longer a representative democracy, with a president that is no longer quite an elected president anymore. And then at that point, we're staring at all sorts of possibilities. The president at that point will realize that he can do whatever he wants, that there is no way that he can be held to account if he simply decides he can't be held to account. And if the opposition fails to respond in an appropriately forceful manner, which I don't think they will manage to do, because, as we all know, Democrats have been in a defensive crouch since 1980. We know this to be true. And at that moment, we will have passed from being a representative democracy, again, such as it is, into something far more and far more profoundly dangerous. It will resemble something more like a dictatorship than a representative democracy. And at that point, we're going to have to examine the very real possibility of things like martial law. We'll have to look at the very real possibility of a state of emergency declared at the border that will lead our way to something like large-scale martial law, the large-scale detention of people of color who may be here without documentation. And if you don't believe me, we're halfway there already. And from there, it's a couple of more short steps to perhaps a third term for President Trump. And if all these possibilities I'm putting out there sound deranged or beyond the pale or somehow impossible, I urge you to think again. When I talk about constitutional crisis, that's what I am talking about. These forces at play have been here absent President Trump, and they will be here after he's hopefully gone. But combined with the unique characteristics of his persona as a malignant narcissist, we're in far more danger than I think most people realize. We've come a long way simply on the resilience of our institutions. But those institutions are in jeopardy in a way that they never have been before, or at least not since the Civil War. That's what I'm talking about. That's the nothingness into which we will all step if President Trump refuses to comply with the oversight powers of Congress. All right, let's go to Dave. You're next.
Yeah, Abe?
Yes.
Yes. I've tried to call in before and say a lot of the same things you were saying, and I was so happy to hear you saying them in that, in your little monologue there. I kind of came at them in a roundabout way, and it didn't come off very well. But I'd like to make two quotes before I hang up. And one is, and I know you've heard of it, you know, don't let the desire for the perfect destroy the good.
Right.
And another one is, this is, I think, Truman, back when the Republicans and the Democrats were at odds like they are now, he said, look, if you Republicans quit lying about us Democrats will quit telling the truth about you Republicans. And I think it kind of tells a little bit about our situation. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, except to say that it's, you know, I don't think you should lump in everybody on the left as Democrats. I, for example, am not a Democrat and haven't been for a long time.
Well, no, I'm just talking about the ones that are.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
When they're debating in the Congress and that.
Okay.
But anyway, like I said, I was really glad to hear you say all that, because I really agree with it. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. This is a serious situation we're in, folks. That's really what I'm trying to get through to you. It's tempting to call it a distraction or a circus or any number of things, but this is deadly, deadly serious. Let's go to Dave. Good morning, Dave. Janice, excuse me. Good morning, Janice.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
I can.
So first of all, thank you so much for that last little bit that you did about Eisenhower. Let me also say that I am in my 60s. I am in one caller called the 10%. I make great money. However, mm-hmm. I am a progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And what you are talking about, the only correction I would make was, I think that one of the right's biggest achievements was the dismantling and the proof that they could dismantle unions under Ronald Reagan.
Thank you.
And that first shot across the bow made them very emboldened. My second point is the only distraction that I get frustrated with is the 140 character obsession of his stupid tweets, because he is burning the country to the ground. We do need him to be impeached. This is not a distraction. And finally, as a 60-something-year-old woman who voted in the first election when they changed the age to 18, there are so few people who vote that sit there now and hold the mantle of the DNC is corrupt and nothing matters, and they can't even be bothered to vote. Then you get a Mitch McConnell, who is the one man in the United States of America that can stop any bills, any legislation. He can anoint, and he has 160 judges to lifetime appointments that these young people...
We're going to have to wrap it up, Janice. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, yeah, no, you're right. Okay, I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate your call. I totally agree, and I appreciate your support. Thank you for giving us a call. Thank you to everybody who took part in the conversation right now. I know this is difficult. I know we're going to disagree, but we got to pay attention above all. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Requiem for a Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge in Portland. This is the Portland debut of Dan Kaufman's band's Modern Western Opera and a benefit to stop a fossil fuel pipeline in Oregon. Requiem for the Rogue tells the fictional story of a Southern Oregon landowner who runs afoul of a modern-day Sheriff of Nottingham, who is in cahoots with a fossil fuel pipeline company. Again, that's Requiem for the Rogue, Portland debut and benefit on Saturday, November 30th from 9 p.m. to midnight at the Atlantis Lounge at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. You don't own the water.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station.